Sustain 267.
Welcome to the Sustain 267 podcast, where we host conversations on different issues affecting climate change in Botswana and the rest of Africa. I am your host, Batuki Lisitse. This week's episode focuses on a word that has popped up quite frequently over the past episodes: partnerships. We thought to unpack that word and explore the possibilities of how we may use partnerships for greater impact as we address climate change. In Botswana, we have seen numerous partnerships between larger organizations partner to address climate change, such as the United Nations with the government of Botswana, the delegation of the European Union, and civil society organizations such as Botswana Climate Change Network, trickling right down to partnerships between academics, such as Professor Dube, who we featured in the Trust the Scientists episode, and individual activists and enthusiasts. We reached out to someone whose key focus is Sustainable Development Goal 17, being partnership for the goals. Mabato Motsamai is the founding editor of The Afroillusionist, a blog that stimulates dialogue on holistic, inclusive African development through a human rights lens. Adopting SDG 17, the blog further hosts in-person discussions on intersectional development, creating agency and participation with youth in Africa. She's the co-founder of Botswana Youth Jobs Fair, an annual affair that stimulates real-time job readiness training and employment activity through multi-stakeholder engagement. She has previously served as the key correspondent for the Positive Vibes KP Reach program and Afrida Young Feminist Fund Climate Justice Story Collector. She serves as the national coordinator of the Breaking Bounds Consortium and the curator for Success Capital's Feminist Digital Magazine. She currently sits on the board of Akina Mama wa Africa and the Botswana National Youth Council, Africa Forest Landscape Restoration Initiative 100 Youth Ambassador. In these roles, she has had numerous successful partnerships under her belt and some within the environmental movement. Our conversation centered more around partnerships between individuals, CSO, and social entrepreneurs. My first question to her was, of all 17 Sustainable Development Goals, why did she choose to focus on SDG 17?
So thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. So when I look at SDG 17 and I look at the mandate of the Afroillusionist, which is a digital institution that is rooted in shaping inclusive development through a human-centric and environmental lens, right? When I look at that, I realize that there are so many intersecting, cross-cutting issues, be it socio-economic issues, psychosocial issues, political issues, and environmental issues that just interlink and interweave themselves in development. I realize that, you know, the best way in reducing inequality, the best way in climate resilience, in mitigation and adaptation is through partnerships. You know, nobody can truly do it alone. And partnerships also help develop a lateral sense of accountability. So, you know, issues of transparency and integrity are obviously met through said partnerships, at least lateral partnerships. So when I look at the Afroillusionist and I look at its mandate, and I also look at my personal mandate outside of the organization, I see that there is collaboration as one of the key solutions to a reduction in inequality and a reduction in violence in all ways.
And that is what is always being highlighted on, that the SDGs, unfortunately, if one fails, then the others will probably fail. They're intersectional in that way, which then makes sense that you would look to focus on partnerships. If we're being honest, not all partnerships are successful. What are the key elements that need to be there in a partnership? I think specifically one that is working towards addressing environmental issues and climate change and environmentally sustainable development.
So in my experience, I'm also recognizing that I'm a non-state actor. I focus on implementable partnerships, or I have implementing partners. Sometimes I can also have strategic partners. And in my experience with successful partnerships, I realized that it's a lot easier when there are not too many cooks in the pot, right? So if you have a close-knit group, which is focused on achieving one specific goal, one specific shared goal, where we're not necessarily coming together based on a financial opportunity, but we're coming together based on achieving this specific goal through shared resources, then yeah, I find that those partners are quite easy to mitigate. Before then, though, I think there is a oversight in establishing rapport. I think through networking, when you network with people and you establish a relationship with these people prior to affirming the partnership, that rapport is able to teach all of us, you know, as partners, our strengths and our weaknesses. And when you pivot from, at least trying to establish the strength and weaknesses, as to just partnering with each other without a full background of, you know, what our shared values are, what our shared strengths are, how we can contribute into making goals work, we do find that some partnerships tend to crumble because of that. But I also do recognize that in the formal and informal settings, in the informal based work, or like the voluntary based work, the forms of partnerships, they tend to be quite stronger because there's a lot of goal focus, and that type of goal focus tends to be met quite quicker. But they do have a lot more short-term goals. What I do find in like long-formed informal partnerships, where there is some kind of structure based on, you know, we're coming together to write a proposal for set funding because you want a goal to be met, and this is how we're going to establish it in this 5-year process, or like a 10-year plan. The long term impact kind of lasts longer because there's a longer term goal or a longer term vision. And I think even when partners are quite informal, you don't necessarily get to be able to track the long term impact of said goal. But when you have all structures in your favor, for example, you have the financial structure in your favor, you have financial resources, you've got logistic resources in your favor, you have strategic partners and implementing partners in your favor, so like a larger form partnership, it is a lot easier to track how this has fed into the larger goal of mitigating climate change, or it has fit into the larger goal of environmental conservation.
Definitely. So shared values and shared ambition, whether it's on a large scale or whether you're going, whether it's a big project or a smaller project. You touched on smaller projects that possibly have volunteers. So something that has stood out for me is, I sometimes see what I feel is exploitation, where it will be called a partnership, but if you look at it, it looks more like exploitation. So how is that then prevented? Where, let's say I come in with certain resources, or there's something that I'm getting out of this, but on the other hand, there's someone who's not getting as much from that. How do we then address the thing of exploitative partnerships, where there's a research project going on and then the people who are actually doing the on-the-ground work are not getting acknowledged in this huge report that's going to be submitted to, I don't know, United Nations? How do we then work our ways around exploitative partnerships?
I think there are different forms of partners, né? And there are also different kinds of relationships that shouldn't necessarily be mentioned, placed in the eye of partnerships. When I look at some things which are maybe centralized versus some things that are decentralized, I can always see where things tend to become a bit extractive. Given the research project as an example, for example, maybe one very large entity has been commissioned to do some kind of research based in a country or a society that they aren't fully physically in, but they still need to extract some information to be able to breathe life into their resource. And perhaps either there was a budget for that or there wasn't a budget for that, but we do tend to find that there is attend to, particularly with Africans in my experience, attend to look for people who are qualified and skilled to do commissionable work, and not really explore the avenues of that very commissionable work to at least place a budget for that. And I think that's where we tend to see things where people are, where it does feel like exploitation, because you're using the skills and the qualifications that I have acquired financially, and I might not be employed at this time, which gives me ample time to be able to do this work. But if I'm going to be placing this work as non-paid on my CV, or if I'm going to, you know, the benefits that I have aren't the benefits that I have aren't really as concrete as the benefits that the very company or the organization would be getting from extracting me doing the work to extract information for them. And those are things where, you know, especially in this kind of economic current, these are practices that we need to place in the past. I really think, particularly when we look into the future, and even when we look into the now, like the COVID and post-COVID realities need to be inclusive of voluntary work not being based on class, voluntary work not being extractive and exploitative, and mostly voluntary work where what I have seen work is when organizations are actually volunteering themselves and their time, and it's a lateral kind of structure, a decentralized type of structure and leadership, where even somebody who is from, let's say, for example, my partnership, the Afrolutionist and Climate Reality was on when you were doing the food conversation. That was voluntary work, where we both brought our resources in and we engaged with an entity that was also giving us their resource for free in order to disseminate information that we all found, and also engaged with other panelists that we all found for free for the benefit of the public. That is a kind of partnership that is lateral in its leadership, because we have decentralized responsibilities, but it's also a kind of partnership where there isn't necessarily a exploitative measure per se, because all resources were put on the table. Everybody had adhered to what they could offer in terms of their responsibility, and the public were fed into, largely benefited from that opportunity, as to the centralized approach of somebody having a budget and resources and can place control in what responsibilities are needed, who needs to say what, as to people pledging their ability to implement some certain things. Yeah.
What do you wish we would see more of in terms of partnerships within the movement, within the environmental movement, within people who are working or volunteering towards addressing climate change?
Sure. I think what I tend to find, because I work in so many sectors, so I can see where, for example, in the entrepreneurship space, or, you know, in the human rights space, in the space of gender, in the space of youth development, and the space of climate change and environment. So I tend to see that in the climate change space, and as well as the environment space particularly, it's so people are really working in silos comparatively to other spaces. There's not really a lot of room for deepened, meaningful collaboration and deepened and meaningful networks. I think that it's, from time to time, I definitely do see it's as if there's like a weight from collaborative action to come maybe from the top or to come from outside, and then maybe we could come together and work. But there isn't really a lot of networking spaces that aren't, a lot of it is really fixated academically, which is a very centralized space as well. So I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for environmental practitioners and climate change activists and practitioners to be able to meet with each other, and then work with each other in the space. it can either, you know, I think we always look at it from a voluntary perspective, but either even through utilizing social entrepreneurs as a central point, for example, in addressing our goals, particularly on climate mitigation and adaptation, I think that there is a lot of opportunity for us to at least network with each other through the lens of social entrepreneurs, and network with each other through the lens of the private sector. I think we are really, you know, in the CSO space and the academia space and the science space, there's so much isolation and silo movement that it's very difficult for us to track progress, and even more so difficult for us to fully engage and appreciate each other's contributions in the space.
So definitely bring everyone together and maximize on what people bring to the table laterally across the different sectors.
Yeah.
Something else that I wanted to touch on when you speak of silos, because that is something that I've heard quite a bit, that the problem is people are working in silos. You've got all these little actions where, if consolidated, would be something huge. If you're going to have 10 little cleanup projects, they don't seem to be having much effect. But if you all then come together, it's 100 people saying, we are having a cleanup together, which is obviously louder. And then something else that I've picked up on, and I'd like your thoughts on it. I recently joined Instagram. I've realized this in the global north, but it's a thing of, you'll have, let's say, 5 people working within the same industry. Let's say home gardening, for example. And what will happen is, within these 5 people, they always plug each other's work, respecting that because we're working in the same place, in the same space, we probably have audiences, even if our audiences are slightly different, but chances are, because of the space that we're in, my audience will be interested in your audience. And what they do is they very actively plug each other. And I mean, these are people whose followings are now sitting at, I mean, one started a page for a new initiative that they were doing, and that page went from almost, I think, 300 followers to a couple of thousands within a couple of days. And it was almost like a marketing campaign. You can see that these people have come together, and it's a thing of, we're going to use collective power to build our voice on the social media platform. But maybe I'm not looking in the right places, but I haven't seen that so much in the African context, especially on social media. Even if people are working in the same area, fine, we'll maybe every now and then discuss a tweet, or we'll find each other in the comments of the same picture. But I haven't seen that plug culture, I think I'll call it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely know what you speak of. I tried to, on my end, to create, because that's something I noticed four years ago, that there is maybe something that we're not necessarily seeing. But I don't think it's in Africa as a whole. I definitely think that I noticed with West Africans that people definitely plug each other in. They definitely see each other as collaborators as to competitors. I think there's a lot of focus on, you know, at least in the context that I'm seeing within Southern Africa, is that even South Africans do share each other's content. I definitely see that, at least in the space that I'm in the different sectors that I tend to engage people with, that there is this, I'm still trying to build my own profile now, and people maybe don't necessarily have that internal need, or they don't see the value proposition of sharing each other's content. But as far as from the experience of the Afrolutionist, we really tried to build a network of people and at least share each other's content when somebody has new blog work, or if somebody has a new project that they wanted to create. I mean, for us, it's because we're also We also function, one of our functions is also to create content. For us, even that is a form of content creation. So there is shared value in doing so. And I think it's mostly in appreciating that there is shared value in spreading each other's messaging and networks. And there is shared value in just, it doesn't cost much, right? Just to say, hey, listen to this person's podcast. But I think that people tend to find themselves in these situations where they see that they don't necessarily have the type of network or that type of click because it hasn't necessarily been a culture that they were engaging in. But I really, really do think that, especially, and I think it's also funny because even in academia, if somebody could publish a new paper, it doesn't really take much for other academics to republish or reshare that, you know, the paper, here's a new paper that can be published. And I just think it's within the human spirit to create a culture of collectivism, but not a culture of collectivism, but not as seen as that this is coming at an expense of my own individuality. But it's just take a day out of your week, you know, share Fridays and then post whatever other people are posting with, post whatever content, sorry, other people have done or created, or even post other initiatives that people are doing. But I do find that this is not to say that I do see that on Twitter, that is a little bit of a common culture in comparison to other social mediums because a retweet is a retweet, it's automatic. So I do think that there's a lot of opportunity in reaffirming ourselves in collective approaches of sharing culture. Not only for what people are doing, but also for opportunities as well.
Be the change you want to see. Share people's things, and hopefully that will catch light.
Yeah, that's also a form of networking in itself. So yeah,
I know you've had quite a number of partnerships. We had one, I think about a year or two ago, where we did a dustbin project where we donated, I think, 20 dustbins to the city of Gaborone to be placed around the city. Which, and then I know you've done others in your capacity as the founding editor at Afroillusionist. With your experience with partnerships, which partnerships would you say have been the most successful? And what were your lessons from them, from the partnership angle?
Okay, so I find that for some of my partnerships, some of these partnerships were birthed through me given an opportunity. For example, with Climate Tracker, I was shortlisted, I think, amongst like 20 other Africans to go for their first workshop in Ethiopia. On climate journalism. And just from that experience, I learned that you, even just from, you know, working with, being, receiving information or knowledge from Climate Tracker, I just believe in the multiplication effect, right? The multiplying effect, sorry. And that's just from what I've learned, I can share. And that beyond institutions, there are human beings that enforce them. So to also establish working relationships with Climate Tracker, know who they are as an organization. And yes, while they have given you an opportunity, this is something that you could, they might also need to, you know, lateral assistance or lateral help. So learning from what they do and seeing how that can be multiplied with the platforms that we also have and come from. So I kept a relationship, of course, with the people from Climate Tracker, and in 2018, we hosted the Cambridge Climate Lecture Series on their behalf in Botswana, because these were a lecture series that was held in Cambridge. This was an initial partnership between Climate Tracker and Cambridge. And from just the experience of hosting it with them, I learned that there's a lot of power in partnerships where you have a lot of control over certain outcomes based on the work that you can do. So if or at least like responsibility. So if through my relationship with Climate Tracker and the informal partnership that we had, I was mainly responsible to giving a platform and giving space for people to listen to the lecture series and then to also develop maybe conversations to come from that. So I'd invite journalists as well as the greater public. And that in itself also bore a new network for me and new partnership opportunities for the Afrolutionist. So I did learn that in partnerships that where you have an engagement with the public, there is an opportunity of a multiplying effect of more work, more partnerships, and more opportunities to help reduce inequality. And when you have less of an engagement or an opportunity to engage with the public, you might have an opportunity to engage with influencers. Maybe it's with regards to policy reform and policy work. I've done some work with the World Bank on a policy reform in Botswana, the World Bank of Botswana. And it definitely taught me that whereas you aren't fully engaging with the public per se, and you are engaging with a AG draft meeting, sorry, Attorney General policy drafters or other government officials, you still have power to create an influence that will still create impact to the public. So just depending on how you're looking at things, even through that, though, I do see that influential partnership doesn't necessarily come to more actioned work from the public. But I do see that there is within each different ways on how you can benefit. But it just depends if you are an implementing person or if you're a strategic person, where your goals and values lie. But for me, as a person who enjoys implementing, I do see a lot more impact when I do more work with public engagement.
And you've had some pretty powerful partnerships there, World Banks and and then lastly, what would your closing words on partnerships within the environmental movement and people who are working on addressing climate change be?
There's a lot more power in collaboration. There are so many international agreements, international treaties we have signed. There are so many protocols that we have either accepted and ratified. There's just so many regional and integrative based work that we have that we are not fully taking to our advantage in helping to enhance our work. And I do think that if it's difficult to collaborate with a different organization, you can use these different international and regional approaches to at least open the door in establishing a relationship with various organizations. Also, there's so much power in social media. There's so much power in these mediums, newsletters and the like, to get to know and understand what other people are doing and appreciating their work. I think we need to all just unlearn the office culture of being between the four walls and relearn the digital space of the world being at our fingertips and the knowledge being at our fingertips. And I think if COVID-19's restrictions have proved anything, is that there is a lot of power in virtual engagement. So I think we need to hold on to that and you know, learn more about each other's projects and be able to use our value to heighten the impact of those projects.
Thank you. Mabotomotsamai, thank you so much for making time to speak to me, and all the best with your future partnerships.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking time to listen to this episode of Sustain 267 Podcast. I'll be posting new episodes every week of conversations on climate change and sustainability in Botswana and the rest of Africa. So as you may know, this podcast is currently self-funded and fueled by my passion as a climate change enthusiast. I truly, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate the support that you give by listening to the weekly episodes. However, If you'd like to take your support a step further and support the production of the podcast financially, please become a patron on my Patreon page. Tiers start from as little as 30 pula or $3 a month. I'll include the link in the show description. I am the host of Sustain 267 podcast, Batokilisitse, and the sound engineer is Maliho Makgoti. Like our Facebook page, Sustain 267, we will be sharing this episode and continuing the conversation. Please share your thoughts on partnership and climate change activism and what you'd like to see more of in that area. The COVID-19 pandemic is still on. In Gaborone, we are currently on our third lockdown and lives are being lost throughout our continent. Let's continue to follow regulations so we and our loved ones stay safe. Take care. Sustain 267.